Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, January the 18th. And as we do every Friday during this hour, it's time to review the news of the week with two guests from different perspectives and with you. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you would like to bring up a topic from the news this week or if you want to talk with our two guests about the news of the week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We are happy to have with us two guests, Ed Garvey, senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil, and McGilvery, former Democratic gubernatorial candidate, editor, and publisher of FightingBob.com. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for braving the cold weather to come in studio.
It is cold.
It is very cold. Ann Althaus is also with us. She joins us by phone from New York, so we didn't ask her to come in studio today. Professor of Law at UW-Madison. She is a visiting professor of law at Brooklyn Law School, and she is blogger at althaus.blogspot.com. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry I'm not there in person.
That's okay. We're happy to have you by phone. Let's start with some news from the presidential campaign trail. That seems to be dominating most of the news this week. We had the Michigan primaries, and Mitt Romney finally got a gold.
Can you imagine what it's like knowing that I've been here standing next to my dad when he accepted the governorship? And I've seen him win, and I saw him win three times in Michigan, of course, and I saw my mom not successful in her race. I've seen winning and losing myself. I like winning better. And
well, Ed Garvey, Mitt Romney got the gold in Michigan. What do you think?
Yeah, finally. He finally won one, I guess, after watching his father march with Martin Luther King Jr. he took that back. He thought he saw
Oh, that's
it.
Right.
It was an interesting moment. It seemed to me that I thought that John McCain was going to win and therefore establish himself as the leading candidate. Romney just doesn't seem like the kind of person who has a chance to be elected, but you never know.
Yeah. What did you make of that win, Ann?
Well, I think he was doing well on the delegates going in with two second places. But I think what's interesting is how people who obviously don't want the Republicans to win are very eager to keep saying that Mitt Romney is a terrible candidate. These aren't people who want the Republican to win anyway. So I think the secret that keeps kind of being revealed is that Mitt Romney actually is the best candidate. And that people like Ed are trying to make people think otherwise.
And when you're out there in Brooklyn, don't buy the bridge.
Oh, no.
I don't care. I would like, I think Mitt Romney would be a perfect candidate for us. You're right. I think he would be probably the easiest one to defeat, although Huckabee is making it
really
a lot easier.
Yeah. Huckabee, McCain, look at the options.
Right.
Well, most are saying that it's just the Republicans can't find that one candidate to unite around. Ann, you think that is Mitt Romney?
You know, I think it should be seen as a positive thing that it's being kept open and it's in play over a longer period of time. I'd like to think we're in a new era where people really do look at a bunch of candidates and don't say, that person's a front runner, we must go there at the earliest possible moment. I think it's healthy and positive that it's not getting all locked up because Iowa and New Hampshire, these two little states, say something. I think we ought to see this as a very positive thing that people, have a variety of different interests, that the Republican Party is, the big tent that it purports to be. Different candidates represent some different interests, and we're going through a period of, sifting through those candidates and thinking it through and letting a lot of states participate. I think that should be seen as a good thing. But it's my personal opinion, actually, that Romney would be the strongest candidate.
Yeah, now who's leading in South Carolina on the GOP side? Isn't it
it's
McCain?
It's tied, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think McCain and Huckabee are pretty close. I don't know I'd have to look up what the
one is pushing the Ten Commandments, the other one is trying to amend them.
What do you
and
mean
Huckabee
by that?
Came out talking about the flag, too. Huckabee made a comment about the Confederate flag.
Yeah, he said,
if somebody came to Arkansas and told us what to do with our flag, we'd tell them what to do with the pole. That's what we'd do.
Well,
what Huckabee said.
It does remind us of the campaign that Bush ran against McCain in South Carolina 8 years ago, when it looked like McCain was going to be the nominee. They really pulled out all the stops. And some of those issues are right back again. Do you fly the Confederate flag? Do we have to embrace Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior in order to vote? You know, those kinds of issues are going to be, I'm sure.
That's a good issue for the other side to say, do we embrace Jesus Christ for our right to vote? That's just a complete slur.
Yeah.
That's your issue. That's not the issue on the Republican side.
McCain is also, there's some nastiness floating around right now, some sort of image of him as a POW. And
a sellout.
Yeah, that he somehow was unpatriotic as a prisoner of war.
Well, that ought to work.
Yeah, I mean, of all the things you could not say about John McCain and be credible is that he somehow was collaborating with the North Vietnamese. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But it shows the desperation, I think, right now of Huckabee. I think Huckabee is, if he doesn't win in South Carolina, is probably finished.
Well, I just looked at the recent polls. They all show McCain ahead.
Yeah, the McCain was, I thought, ahead from what I saw. Stephen LaCrosse joins us. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the Republican field in South Carolina. The other one on the bubble, besides Huckabee, maybe our friend Fred Thompson, who seemed to enunciate that Reagan vision, and that's how he's running, but it doesn't seem to be catching on anywhere. Is South Carolina his last chance? And if they could comment on the field again, it seems to be a struggle between your traditional Reagan conservatives and the new wave represented by, or the broader tent, Giuliani, McCain, and Huckabee. So what's going on over there? And will they rally behind Romney as your traditional Republican?
You hope so, Ann?
Well, I mean, when people wanted Fred Thompson to come in, they had very high hopes, and they did see him as being sort of the stereotypical ideal or the Reagan-type person. But I think because he didn't hit the ground running and he has this sort of slow demeanor, that a lot of people lost hope in that. But again, if the race stays open and it doesn't get locked up on one person early on, then I think he has a chance to continue to, you know, try to be the last man standing to gain support. He was very good in the most recent Republican debate, and people got enthused again. So if the timeline is long enough, he could win support. And I think the other, it's sort of between him and Romney for the more sort of traditional type of Republican candidate. And I think a lot of, you know, like Rush Limbaugh and National Review are kind of pushing Romney rather than Thompson, which is interesting. But you're right that Huckabee and Giuliani and McCain seem to represent, you know, maybe the party could be changed in some way, and that would be a good thing. We could, you know, maybe break it down into, we could modernize it in some way. I know there was some talk from David Brooks in the New York Times the other day about how McCain and Huckabee represent modernization of the party.
I don't know what that means, but...
Yeah, I don't know either.
I didn't know you could say Giuliani without saying 9/11.
Giuliani's been lying low, so we haven't heard much from him at all yet.
He barely beat out the uncommitted in Michigan, which I thought was an interesting show, down about 2.8%.
Yeah.
I think it's a strategy that is going right into the dumpster.
Well, but it could work, you know, because it's being kept open. You know, he's not getting beaten up. He's just off stage. And if he shows up and something dramatic happens in the Florida primary, he could, you know, suddenly burst back up to the top. So I think it's volatile enough that could happen.
Yeah, now Fred Thompson, I think, was polling fourth in South Carolina, very close to third place. But, Ed, is Fred Thompson gone if he doesn't get
the... Well, I think he was the most disappointed person in the country about Iowa because he thought he would be able to go home. And instead of that, he did better than expected.
Well, I don't believe that.
He clearly is, you know, half awake in these discussions. You know, he's just not with it, and I don't think he would stand up well in a debate situation. So I'll make Ann happy. I'd rather have Fred Thompson as a candidate for the Republicans than Mitt Romney.
You know, I think this idea that he's slow or half awake, I mean, the positive side of that is that he's an adult. He's not into the sort of, you know, fighting back and forth of politics. He's just a solid adult person who sort of looks from a distance, like that time when there was a debate when people, the Des Moines Register's debate, when people were asked to raise their hand and he wouldn't raise his hand, he sort of pulled off the moderator. you know, he has this quality of maybe being more adult than everyone else. And that, and so you may say, well, he's slow, he doesn't seem to be into it. But his point is that he would be into being president, but this other thing we have to do is a little bit beneath him. I don't know if that's an effective way to fight, but, you know, I think that the idea that, oh, he's about to drop out and he doesn't even want to do it at all, and if he doesn't win here, and he's said that about some other candidates too, oh, if they don't win here, they're going to leave. I think that that is a gloss that's put on it by the media or by people who want a particular person to leave, and it doesn't come from the candidate themselves, and it doesn't take sufficient account of the fact that the timeline is different in this debate and that it is being, in this campaign season, that it's being kept open over a longer period of time.
I need to jump in, Ed, because we have to take a short pause. We will talk about the Democratic side of the ticket for the presidential nomination as well, but just point out that Hillary Clinton won the Michigan primary, but it was meaningless because the Democratic National Committee penalized Michigan for moving up its primary. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions about the race for president and issues in the news this week regarding the race for president as we review the news of the week with Ann Althaus, a professor of law at UW-Madison, a visiting professor of law at Brooklyn Law School. She is a blogger at althaus.blogspot.com. And Ed Garvey, who is senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil, and McGilvery. He also is editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. 1-800-642-1234, toll free if you'd like to join in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Friday, January the 18th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. And every Friday after 4, Ben and his guest talk about your views on the news. You get to call in with the story that caught your attention this week, the story you think was the biggest news story of the week. That's this afternoon after 4 o'clock. You can do that, too, as we talk with two guests from different perspectives about the news of the week during our regular Friday Week in Review. Our guests today, Ann Althaus and Ed Garvey, and we'll continue talking about the race for president with Mike in Cottage Grove, our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I guess, Ed, you had taken a shot at the Republicans here just a few minutes ago about the Jesus vote. Let's talk about the Democrats over the last week, this wonderful race-baiting battle that we've seen between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Let's talk about the culinary union and the battle between the teachers union in Nevada, where you had the teachers union literally arguing that the culinary union, large blocks of Hispanic voters, their concern about letting the caucuses occur in the casinos was because of illegal immigrants, that there would be too many unregistered voters. Now, that's the Democratic side, Ed. If you're going to take shots at the Republicans, let's talk about the really stinky level that the Democrat side has sunk, has sunk to in this battle.
Mike, we were certainly going to get to the Democrats.
Yeah. He must be reading my blogs because I've been raising the roof about this. I mean, the idea that once the culinary workers endorsed Obama, when they were supposed to endorse Hillary, Hillary and Bill blew their collective fuse and went to court to say that they shouldn't have the voting booths at the casinos. And also claimed that they had nothing to do with it, as if the teachers suddenly woke up and said, why don't we file a lawsuit to cut out some of the Hispanic voters who would be voting in the casinos. I think what you're getting to is this. The Democratic Party seems to have stepped aside. I don't know where Howard Dean is, but somebody should wake him up and get him back involved. Before the Iowa caucuses, Gannett, owner of the Des Moines Register, eliminated Gravel and Kucinich from the debate. They just said they're not viable. Then CNBC out of Nevada decided that Kucinich couldn't be in once he had been invited. They changed the rules. Dennis went to court and won a decision from a local judge to stop the debates unless he could be involved, but it was overturned within 24 hours by the Supreme Court of Nevada. You wonder, you know, why is the Democratic Party stepping aside and saying, let's allow CNBC and Gannett to determine who is viable and who is not? I think it hurts the Democratic Party, and so I almost agree with you, Mike.
Yeah, you want to talk about this lawsuit and the culinary workers, Ann Althaus?
Well, yeah, obviously. I think it's important to say that Hillary Clinton's campaign didn't bring the lawsuit, but Ed's right that it looks like the people who are allied with her, there's enough to, you know, deniability built in. But I don't even know why they did it for their, would even want that to happen, because it looks so bad that even if it is disadvantageous, it only makes it worse. To call attention to it and to oppose the culinary workers. It's
and,
only going to make more people want to vote for Barack Obama. Yeah.
And then to answer Tim Russert, when he asked, were you behind the lawsuit, Hillary sort of skipped over, then Bill is pointing
Bill
his finger.
Bill got all mad.
Yeah, he blew his top and started to, you know, sort of finger in the face of this reporter.
Mm-hmm. And that's on YouTube, and everybody can look at that all over and over. Bill Clinton lost his temper.
Well, I think the most important part is that once again, it shows that Bill simply cannot step aside for Hillary to run, and we're going to get two for the price of one if she is elected. And you can just imagine the Republican campaign just gearing up right now. It's going to be aimed at Bill Clinton because he's making it clear that he's intimately involved in every aspect of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were Hillary Clinton one of her advisors, I'd say, why don't you send Bill on a little vacation?
Yeah, but you can't do either thing. I mean, she is what she is because of him. You get the good and the bad. You can't get the good without the bad, and she can't make it without the good, and he is going to get back in the White House. I mean, you can't pretend people aren't going to think about that. It's an incredibly odd situation.
Yeah, you know,
for the former president to get back in the White House, the man is disqualified constitutionally under the 22nd Amendment from being president again. If what we're really doing is trying to get him back, there's something a little wrong with the whole thing, but obviously we have to look at him. And I think that the man actually is deeply conflicted about what he wants. I mean, he has to want to help her, and he must care about his own power, but he can't be president again.
Well, perhaps.
I mean, I think he alternates between helping and hurting her, and he's kind of a loose cannon, partly because he's such an emotional person. I think that's part of a whole package. That's a very brilliant, extraordinary man, and he does have these. There's an article in the New York Times today about how he has these bursts of angers. Like, the people who work closely with him regard him as sort of a volcano, and they've learned to live with it. But, you know, in this YouTube age, every time he does it, it's going to be a clip, and it'll be front page linked on Matt Drudge, and everybody will look at it over and over. And, you know, that's the way we are today. But when he does try to help her, he can do a fabulous job. Although sometimes it makes you think, well, wait a minute, he's the better person. Why can't we have him?
Well,
that's the point.
Given this Supreme Court, if Hillary is elected, they'll probably rule that Bill can't be in the White House.
Federal judge yesterday, though, did refuse to shut down 9 casino-based sites for the Las Vegas caucuses, which are tomorrow, delivering a victory to Senator Barack Obama in what has become an increasingly bitter Democratic contest here. What happens, Ed, in the Las Vegas caucuses?
Well, I think that it may be a victory for Obama, but it's more of a loss for Hillary Clinton because she was so hypocritical in supporting the idea of having those voting booths in the casinos. Then when she lost the endorsement of the culinary workers, changed her position and said, no, it's unfair to have the ballots brought to them. I mean, it seems to me that Democrats, if they stand for anything, ought to be saying, we are in favor of expanding the franchise. It's the Republicans who want to limit the franchise. It's the Republicans, you know, who went after the African American voters in Florida and who took care of Ohio to make sure that Bush carried it. And here is the Democratic Party acting as if they want to stop people from the convenience of voting. It may help Barack, but I think it's certainly going to hurt Hillary.
Well, I mean, it makes it clear that everybody is just for whatever helps them, and nobody is against fraud and for enfranchisement and leans all the way to enfranchisement or all the way in favor of fighting fraud. Everybody's picked their position with respect to fraud versus enfranchisement based on who they think is going to vote for them. And Hillary just kind of made it really obvious.
Let's take a caller. Marty in Douglas County. Hi, Marty. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Well, my hope is that this slugfest between Hillary and Bill and Barack Obama and his campaign workers will turn out to be very similar to the 1992 Democratic candidate Senate race that we had here in Wisconsin, where I can only remember one of the candidates. Of course, that's Russ Feingold. I can't remember the other two people who were
Chakota and Kasten.
Oh, you mean for the
yeah,
first,
they slugged it out, and then Feingold won.
Right, exactly.
Moody and, wasn't it Jim Moody and
Moody? Moody, that's it. Yeah,
right.
Moody.
In fact, I was at the public television studio when Shakota said, well, if you can't vote for me, vote for Moody. I mean, vote for Feingold.
yeah, that's right. So anyway, do you think, Ed, that Hillary and Barack slugging it out is good for John Edwards?
I think it's good for Edwards. Mm-hmm. Somehow he hasn't he hasn't been able to get any traction. I find him to be a very attractive candidate. I think, I'm closer to his views on issues than anyone else in the race other than Kucinich. But, who knows? I mean, things could happen if Clinton should lose in Nevada. Perhaps Edwards finishes second. That might just shake things up a bit so that Edwards might start gaining some traction.
Yeah.
You know, could I say that we did, Mike, the first caller, Mike, I guess he was the second caller, brought up the subject of race baiting between the first two candidates, and we didn't really talk about that.
Yeah, in fact, let me play an excerpt, though, from the debate of those Democratic candidates, the one where Kucinich was excluded from, but both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton at that debate addressed the feud going on over race and gender, and they were pledging to put this behind them.
I think that it's appropriate on Dr. King's birthday, his actual birthday, to recognize that all of us are here as a result of what he did.
Race has always been an issue in our politics and in this country. But one of the premises of my campaign, and I think of the Democratic Party, and I know that John and Hillary have always been committed to racial equality, is that we can't solve these challenges unless we can come together as a people.
So, Anne, you wanted to say?
Well, I mean, that was the so-called truth, and mm-hmm. whose interest is that truth in? It's in Hillary Clinton's interest. And of course, I don't believe that they're not going to continue to make race and gender an issue. It's just a matter of who wants to choose, who wants to control how it's done. And I think it's a move by Hillary Clinton to say, oh, we're not going to talk about this anymore. Well, it was hurting her. Now, he has to, of course, accept the offer of a truce because his whole campaign is built on this idea that he's a conciliatory, you know, he's going to bring us a person, he's going to bring us together and so forth. So he has to, engage in that dance on that particular occasion. But, of course, the issue will come back. And I think it's an effort. It was a well-done play by Hillary Clinton in a game which she is trying to win. Of course, although she likes to say, it's not a game, it's about people. That's one of her quotes.
I take it you're not a Clinton supporter.
I don't like her, but I voted for Bill Clinton twice, and I can very easily see myself voting for her just because I might be closest to her on the issue. Yeah. But I have a big problem with making Bill Clinton president again. I also, much as I've all my life thought it would be very exciting to get a first woman president, it bothers me that the first woman president who might actually make it is making it on her husband's strength and not as an independent woman.
That's why I supported, never mind. As you look at that issue, I think it was blown up by both sides. And it was really CNBC more than it was the candidates trying to find a wedge, trying to make sensational news. For heaven's sakes, if we could get these debates back in the hands of the League of Women Voters or some independent group, I mean, this is nuts to have the networks deciding what the questions are and asking, diamonds or pearls and, so on and so forth. You can almost hear them saying, well, Hillary, do you still hate blacks? And Barack, how do you feel about Hispanics? I mean, is there...
Yeah. No,
can
Ed,
I say something
I mean,
about
it's just ridiculous. We need Robin Williams, not that Williams.
Yeah.
Could I say something mm-hmm. about the exclusion of Kucinich? Mm-hmm. I think that MSNBC made the correct decision to exclude him when they did. When the original offer, the invitations went out, he complains about being disinvited, and he went to court and tried to get a court
and won.
To tell... Well, he won at the trial level. He lost at the state Supreme Court level. But he tried to get a court to tell the independent media what they should do. And that's a First Amendment
nonsense.
Concern. It's a concern about, I'm going to say why I think MSNBC made the correct decision in excluding him. When the original invitations went out, Biden and Dodd and Richardson were still in the race. So
and
to
they
have
should
a
have
big,
spoken
wait
up.
Wait a minute, let me make the whole point.
Of course.
To have the whole big array that included Kucinich at that point made sense. But with all of those secondary characters out, to have Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich would be an absurd panel.
Well,
including
absurd
Dennis
in your
Kucinich
view.
At that point, he just isn't a strong enough candidate that he deserves to be there. We're focusing on people who have a genuine shot. and he would be there as sort of a joker in the deck.
We ask a lot of you, and we ask a lot of you, but we don't ask you to be the Democratic Party to determine who's viable and who isn't.
No,
the
I'm
CNBC,
not. The,
well, I'm if in the next
MSNBC
debate,
MSNBC made the choice.
If the next debate, CNBC says, "Well, we're just going to have Hillary Clinton debating with John McCain. We don't think that Obama is viable." What do you do then? I mean, it's up to them. That's what's so ridiculous.
Then I say more speech. Other channels should have some other debates and do some other pairings. And
we
let
know
there
that
be a market in media.
Well. Yeah, the way I understood it, too, Ed, though, is MSNBC said the top four candidates would be invited to this debate, and that would have been Richardson, but then he dropped out.
So the top four included Dennis Kucinich.
Right.
But they shouldn't be the ones making the decision. It ought to be Howard Dean and the Democratic Party. This is our party, not Ann Althaus's party or CNBC's party.
I think the media is the media. The media can set up their shows, and there is diversity in the media. There are a lot of different stations. There are a lot of different news outlets.
Diversity?
And there's also there's infinite diversity on the Internet. You can do webcasts. You could put together any possible
pairing. Or you could have billboards.
It's a competition for the viewer, and people can either watch or not watch.
You could have picket signs. You can have letters out to people. The fact is that the conglomeration of the media makes it almost impossible for candidates like Dennis Kucinich to have a chance. And once the media decides that you're not viable, whether you're Joe Biden or Chris Dodd, you're sort of shunted out of the way. The Democrats ought to decide, not some network people.
No, I don't see why. I think it's better to have independent media and better to have a situation that's more like a market rather than the party deciding who to put forward. And I don't know that they would help Dennis.
Ed, besides Kucinich being excluded from that debate, did you find it valuable at all? Really?
It was one of the most boring 2 hours I've ever spent. And part of it is because they were being so careful. I like you very much. Not as much as I like you, Hillary. And, John, how do you feel about being a white male in between these two? And, ha, 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 isn't this just fun? Kucinich would have raised the question about the funding of the war. He would have raised the question about bringing the troops home now. He would have raised the question about taxes and inequities in our system. So, his role is to raise those issues. He's not going to be the nominee. He's not going to be president of the United States, but he had a very valuable role to play in this debate. I miss Joe Biden. I thought he added a lot. I don't know why he dropped out the way he did, but he did. But Kucinich has not.
Now, here's an exchange from that debate where Hillary Clinton asked Barack Obama a question. All of the candidates could ask a question of the other candidates.
We have to do everything we can to prevent President Bush from binding the hands of the next president. So I have introduced legislation that clearly requires President Bush to come to the United States Congress. It is not enough, as he claims, to go to the Iraqi parliament, but to come to the United States Congress to get anything that he's trying to do, including permanent bases, numbers of troops, all the other commitments he's talking about as he's traveling in that region. And I want to ask Senator Obama if you will co-sponsor my legislation to try to rein in President Bush so that he doesn't commit this country to his policy in Iraq, which both of us are committed to end.
Well, I think we can work on this, Hillary, because I don't think, we got unity in the Democratic Party, I hope, on this.
Is that right, Ed?
Well, what about Iran? I mean, you see, Dennis would have said, well, how, what do you think about Iran when you've got the Prime Minister of Israel saying that we'll take care of Iran if you don't, and Bush and Cheney continuing to say that they want to bomb Iran, Giuliani saying he wants to bomb Iran, this phony crisis of the two speedboats chasing these destroyers, and the candidates for the Republicans essentially saying they would have blown them out of the water. I mean, but nobody raises that issue. That's why I think Kucinich would have been so valuable. Even worse than the exchange here was when they said, what's your biggest failing? And Hillary said, because there's not enough of me to solve all the problems.
Oh, she says she gets impatient.
Well, that is like the classic job interview question. Yeah. Like, what's your greatest weakness? I sometimes work too hard.
Well, yeah.
Too loyal.
You know what? Barack Obama did bring up maybe what could be considered a real flaw by saying, I'm not very organized with paperwork, and I'm going to need to have advisors.
That may be like him.
Yeah, he was human.
He's getting beat up over that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course he'll get beat up over anything, yeah. He says. But, you know, I wanted to say about that Hillary Clinton yeah. quote that you just played. It was a really nice contrast between the two candidates and shows why people find Obama so appealing. I mean, she had this really sort of strident sound to her voice, and she used the occasion of asking someone else as an occasion to go on and on about some legislation that she was introducing, one of her accomplishments, and then her question to Obama was, will you sign on to my proposal? Sort of like, I mean, it was such a ridiculous, transparent power play and bragging about herself. And then he was sort of relaxed and laughed and said, we will work on this, Hillary. And yeah. and just the tone of his voice after listening and to her was such a relief.
Wouldn't it have been fun to have been her professor at the law school?
I'm reading Carl Bernstein's book about her, Woman in Charge, and there's a section in that about how, you know, both Bill and Hillary were law professors at the same time at the University of Arkansas. You know, did you know that?
I didn't know they were accredited.
And there's a funny contrast between the kinds of professors the two of them were, and I don't really have to say what it is because you can just imagine it, and you'll be right.
John in Burlington, one last comment on the presidential race, and then I promise we will move on to other issues. John, go ahead.
My question would be, what do you think about the fact that, okay, they said that John McCain lost Michigan because of his so-called straight talk, telling people, you've lost these jobs, they're not coming back, and the fact that Edwards can't seem to get up there, and he's the one that's more of the bottom line, here's the deal kind of candidate, whereas the rest seem to still be saying what they think they need to say and being very vague about things. And I think, is it just me, or is that, you know, totally correlating with the fact that, you know, we're you know, whether yeah. it's Ross Perot or John yeah. McCain or...
Right. I guess we're kind of running a little bit short on time on this topic. Can I ask you, Ann, first, did John McCain yeah. get hurt by saying that, you know, hey, here in Michigan where you're really hurting, you're not going to get those jobs back?
Well, people want optimism. People want to feel that there's hope. So you can't just tell people there's no hope. But I think that the bigger problem with McCain, I think people do like the whole straight talk approach. I think he's a very appealing person. But I think that he just seems liberal to traditional conservatives.
Maybe it's just that everyone knows that the surge is failing, and he's taking credit for it.
The surge is failing, eh, Ed?
You got it.
That's your position?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Well, you know what? We can't get into that right now because it's break time, and we have to move on to some other issues in just a moment. We'll talk about some state issues, but we'll also talk about the economy and the president today saying he's going to, you know, propose an emergency economic stimulus package. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Our two Week in Reviewers this week are Ann Althaus and Ed Garvey. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. More talk about politics coming up after 9 o'clock when Kathleen Dunn and her guests will look ahead to tomorrow's Democratic caucus in Nevada, the influence of the Latino vote and worker unions. So more on that coming up after 9 o'clock. And then after 10 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will talk about the Packers and the greatest moments in Packer history. Sounds good, Ed?
It does indeed. Mm-hmm. And since the last caller was from Burlington, or Tony Romo is from, and I'm from, I'm glad he didn't make it into the into the championship game. It would have been tough.
Well, I know. We did a program on Packer Mania earlier this morning.
I don't think enough has been written about it.
No, not at all. So, Ann, is there Packer Mania going on in New York? Oops, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Oh, I'm not really following football.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I hope the Wisconsin teams always win, but I'm not a football fan.
All right. We will talk about President Bush is expected to announce later today an emergency economic stimulus package to try to ward off a recession. Apparently, he's going to propose $800 tax rebates for individuals and up to $1,600 for married couples. Other stuff in this package, but a lot of people are focused in on these proposed tax rebates. Good idea, Ed Garvey?
Well, they're going to have to do something. I mean, I think they ought to go after the subprime lenders. They ought to do something to stop the foreclosures. Something like 2 million Americans might be kicked out of their homes where are these people going to live, who's paying their taxes, who's taking care of their kids going to school, and so on. Anything that gets some money into the hands of working families, I think, is positive. Reverse the tax breaks for the top 1%, put that money in the hands of people who spend it, and you'd do a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Ann?
Well, Ed seems to want to redistribute income as a general political policy, which I assume he would have whether we were facing a recession or not. I mean, I think it's a general political position of his.
Well, I remember when...
And, of course, Bush's general political position is to cut taxes, so his response to the threat of a recession is basically the same policy that he usually wants. So I would say look for everybody to use it as an occasion to push whatever economic policy they usually push when they don't have an occasion.
When Bill Moyers was interviewing Kevin Phillips, he said in 1984, the wealthy declared class warfare, and they've won. I mean, the fact is that the tax system is so disproportionately favorable to the top people at the top 1%, 2%, and 3% that ought to change. You're right, Ann. I do think there ought to be a redistribution. There ought to be a more progressive tax system than the one we have. And to do that, you're going to have a change in the administration, a change in Congress. But the immediate need is to get some money in the hands of working people.
I think the real question ought to be it's really true that the economy needs to be stimulated. What does stimulate the economy? I'm not an economist, so I don't have an ideological response for it, which is what I think Ed has and President Bush has.
In state news, Republican state lawmakers say that Wisconsin's economy has been stagnant and is in risk of falling into a recession. They outlined an agenda on Wednesday designed to revitalize the state's economy. Many of the ideas are supported by Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. It includes eliminating a tax on capital gains that are reinvested in Wisconsin companies, and the Republican plan also includes a 1% income tax cut and a variety of other tax credits that are not backed by the governor. Any reaction, Ed, to the Republican plan to stimulate Wisconsin's economy?
Well, they're not being serious. I mean, I think with a Republican-dominated assembly and a Democratic-dominated Senate, nothing is going to pass in the immediate future. But right away, let's cut the progressive tax. Let's let people pay more in property tax, sales tax, and fees. This is the shame, really, of state government over the past 20 years. People simply don't have the courage to do what Judy Robson did, for example, talking about a healthy Wisconsin. We have problems. We ought to be solving those problems, not just cutting the taxes for those who can afford to pay a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Ann?
Well, I think property taxes are terribly high in Wisconsin, so the idea that they should rise, I just think that that's very upsetting to Wisconsin citizens generally, I would think. I would like the two parties to get together and get serious and plan things that are pragmatic and sensible, like capital gains cuts when they're reinvested in Wisconsin. That sounds like something that is moderate and something that people from both sides could agree on. So I hope Governor Doyle can play a role like that in trying to get some sensible, yeah, actually workable things through.
Let's take a call. Dennis in Beloit. Hi, Dennis.
Yes. Regarding health care in Wisconsin, I noted this past week that the governor did make an extension of Badger Care. I have to think I'm fortunate enough to have health coverage myself. But I really happen to think we really haven't had a real meaningful discussion on health care and really what the importance that would be to our economy, because I feel there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are, in some cases, job-locked for what insurance coverage they might have, and that's understandable. Are we going to see a real debate on health care coverage for all in Wisconsin at a reasonable level, I might add?
Well, Healthy Wisconsin is back on the table, but...
Yeah. Well, I would hope so, and I agree with you. We don't have much of a discussion on anything these days. The idea of a hearing before the legislature, if you go to one, you'll realize that it's a lost art. I mean, it's a room full of lobbyists who have put the fix in before you even get a chance to comment. So I think on health care, on diversion of the Great Lakes, the Great Lakes Compact, what we're doing about clean air and utilities that burn dirty coal, mercury in our waters, how you clean up the Fox River, these are issues that ought to be on the front burner. We ought to be having discussions, but we're not. And I think this is a failure of leadership, and somehow or other we're going to have to pick it up. One way we're going to help do that is bringing Jim Hightower into Wisconsin in April for FightingBob.com. So I knew you were wondering about that when he was going to be here.
In April? Okay, but that's not Fighting Bob Fest
no,
in April.
No, just a just, little extra.
Well, we'll have to talk to him when you bring him in.
Okay.
Anne, what about health care? Will there be a healthy debate on that?
I think Ed summed things up pretty well, and I think I didn't disagree with anything he said. Oh, I didn't really catch what relevance Jim Hightower had to, but yes, I wish people would get together and do some sensible things and serve the people of Wisconsin instead of pursuing their own political interests. But, you know, so has it always been.
No, let's.
I'm going to get you a special invitation, Anne, to the Hightower Lecture.
Let's talk about this. The state Senate did pass a bill this week that would raise Wisconsin's minimum wage from $6.50 an hour to $7.25 an hour, and then it would increase annually, automatically, based on inflation. So, good idea, Ed Garvey?
Great idea.
And you don't think it's a good idea, Anne?
Well, again, I'm not an economist, but I think that tying the minimum wage to inflation is going to set up an inflationary spiral, and to have Wisconsin doing that independently, I think, is probably likely to be harmful to the interest in having a business in Wisconsin. I don't know. Maybe there's some argument against that, but I think it. The idea that we can just, inflation is affected by the level of the wages, and if you tie the two together, then you can never stop doing that once you've made the tie. How do you withdraw that? It's like the problem that we have with, Social Security payments were tied to inflation, and that removes some flexibility. Once you've done it, you can't take it back. I think it's a real mistake then.
Well, and that's why senior citizens are the group that do not have nearly as much poverty as any other group in our society.
Yeah.
But the real problem we have is that the way that the labor unions have been decimated by the National Labor Relations Board and by a series of presidents, the unions don't have the power to raise the salaries that they used to have, so it's incumbent upon the legislature to make sure the people at the bottom of the scale have some kind of a living wage. I mean, even at this increased amount, I think it would be, about $14,000 a year? Well, trying to imagine $14,000 a year trying to raise a child, can't do it. So it's not like we're giving them a king's ransom.
The idea is that, the minimum wage is a starting wage, and that one works on one's way up and gets paid more because of market forces. Not because the government dictated it and put everybody at the bottom at a higher wage. So you shouldn't be raising a family and having a child if you're only making minimum wage. You should work your salary up to a higher level. The more you put these restraints on, and the less you're relying on market forces.
You know, the Senate passed this minimum wage hike and indexing bill, but it's not going to pass the Assembly. I mean, were saying before.
For heaven's sakes, I mean, that's just, they're just going to probably pass out when it gets over there.
So then it's mainly just a gesture to make, to warm Ed's heart.
Well, it did warm my heart, and it's very cold out here today, Anne, so if you were here.
Well, here's something the Assembly passed this week. Final approval to the statewide referendum, the proposed constitutional amendment to limit the governor's partial veto power. Voters will vote in April whether to scale back what is called the Frankenstein veto, in which governors can stitch together unrelated words and numbers to create new sentences with different laws and spending levels. Should the Frankenstein veto, Ann Althaus, be banned?
Well, obviously, it's just a completely random, chaotic way to make a law. It holds Wisconsin up to ridicule everywhere else. I mean, I've blogged about the Frankenstein veto, and it takes people a while to get what it actually means. And once they realize what it means, they think, what's going on in Wisconsin? It's just an embarrassment.
Well,
obviously, people should vote to get rid of it.
I think you really have to applaud the patience of the Republicans who did nothing during the 16 years of Tommy Thompson's distortion.
Right, everybody likes the power.
But
they
finally come around. I think it's great. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I see that Jim Doyle is not in favor of this, and right. Those who really want to get rid of the line item veto are not too happy either, so it'll be interesting.
That's right. Frank Boyle was the only lawmaker, apparently, that didn't vote for this.
Well, if Frank's against it, I'm against it.
How about, I don't know, we just have a few minutes left here for some state issues. I know there was a public hearing on a bill that would lower the legal hunting age in Wisconsin from, Ed's laughing because he probably doesn't know about this bill, but from 12 to 10. And a public hearing, a lot of people say this is a good way to get younger people involved in the sport of hunting and to keep this tradition alive and
et cetera. Are they required to have an adult with them?
Yes, they would be required to have an adult mentor, be within arm's length of that adult mentor, and only one gun to be shared between the adult and the child of 10. But still, opponents say this is too risky. You shouldn't be giving kids that are 10-year-olds a gun to go shoot in the woods.
At first, they made it 8. At the same time that they were saying that you have to strap children into seats in the car until they're age 8. So you can just imagine them unbuckling the kids in their seat, handing them a gun and saying,
right.
Get out there
that's
and shoot,
right,
kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think, and my father gave me a 22 rifle when I was 16 years old, and you know, I was never to use it without his being there and a lot of training. I just think, you know, people ought to leave well enough alone here.
Yeah. Any comments on this
one? Well,
Ann?
I think there are all kinds of things that kids can do, like skiing when they're young. I mean, you can get hurt doing a lot of things. I think it all a 12-year-old versus a 10-year-old, it depends on the maturity of the child and how responsible the adult is.
Well, most of those mature ones.
I think there are a lot of people who live in very remote areas where there's a lot of space, and people want to include their children in a tradition before they... You know, a young boy who's 10 is very different from a young boy who's 12. I have two sons, and I think you go through a lot of changes in those years, and somebody who's 10 might be really open to bonding with a parent and learning how to do something new and something technical. I think being able to include a 10-year-old boy, 10-year-old girl, too. I mean, I don't have a girl, so I don't know. But I think a boy who's 12 is more in his adolescence and more rebellious, and it may be a lost opportunity to really do something with your child. So I think having something that a parent really loves, like hunting, that can be shared with a 10-year-old could be a very special opportunity. So why limit parents and children that way?
Let me take a wild guess. Your 10-year-old is a conservative. Your 12-year-old is a progressive.
My kids are in their 20s, and I didn't go hunting with either of them, but I remember the way I was able to share activities with them prior, when they were pre-adolescents. It's a wonderful time. I don't know if you have boys, but it's a wonderful time to do things with boys right before they go into adolescence, when a lot of, they change. Their emotions change, their attitudes change, the things they want to do with you change. And so I think 10 should be seen as a very special age in a good way.
Yeah.
Not that he's going to go shoot somebody. Because, you know, even when he's 12, he could go shoot somebody.
We have just less than a minute left, and Dave and Wanneke is still online with one more item from the news this week.
Yep, still. I just noticed that Bobby Fischer died today, and he was important to me in that I grew to love chess because of him. And while he was a very tortured individual, I think he did more for chess than anyone in its history.
I just go along with what the caller just said.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very exciting time back when Fischer and, I guess, Spassky were and was on TV. I don't know if younger people don't remember this, but I think it was on public television, and the two men were playing chess, and they were explaining chess, and it was a very vivid moment for chess for Americans. So it really, really did do something wonderful. It's a shame that he turned out to have some strange opinions and problems, and so then he became a recluse and renounced his American citizenship and so forth. But there was a moment there where chess was really very exciting, and it's nice for the people that can remember it.
We will leave it there on that note. Ann Althaus, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Ed Garvey, thank you very much, too.
Good to see you. Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Ed Garvey, Ann Althaus, our two guests this week for the Week in Review. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and calling in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.